These introductions, they're always a little bit embarrassing. In fact, I'm sometimes reminded of a man who was introduced to a crowd like this by the MC of the program, and he was introduced as a very important person. He had made $1 million in Californian oil development. So as he got up to speak, he said to the audience, and he said to the master of ceremonies, I thank him very much for the introduction. And although generally what he said was true, he thought that he should make a few corrections. He said that it was not actually in Californian oil, but it was in Pennsylvania. And it wasn't oil, but it was in coal. And he actually didn't make $1 million. He had lost $1 million. And it wasn't actually him, but it was his brother. But still, he thanked the MC for the introduction. So, one of actually my, what we call Vartma Pradarshak Guru, Jayananda Prabhu, he once told me that when you have been around for a long time and you're sort of older than the other people, they just kind of naturally give you a little respect, whether you deserve it or not. So from what I know, I am, you know, just basically another Canadian visiting Slovenia, aspiring to become a devotee of Srila Prabhupada, and I'm really an ordinary type of person, but I've been around for a long time. Today's subject is as much for my benefit as it is for anyone. The title of our little discussion is A Disciplined Life versus Bogus Philosophies. Now, a lot of times, well, practically it's a rule in history that children, especially teenagers, youth, they never accept any good instruction from their parents. It's a rule. You just don't do it. It's not cool. In fact, there's a saying in English, never trust anyone over 30 years old. But you're going to find that when you get over 30, there's another saying, and that is life begins at 40. There was a famous guru of ours, maybe some of you can guess his name, but he said, I was so much older then, I'm younger than that now. Anybody knows? Does it sound like Mr. Robert Dylan? Bob Dylan? Anybody ever heard of him? Okay, he's not that old. So one of the things, of course, I rebelled against my father, but one thing that I realize now that he taught me was discipline. He was a tough person. He was funny. He was a social worker on one side, but he was colonel of a regiment on the other, the British Columbia Regiment. So I didn't join the Boy Scouts. That was never an option. It was cadets right from the time I was 13 or 14. And every summer I spent at cadet camp for 2 months. And twice a week I was down at the regiment for training and drill and whatever. You don't know because you probably don't have cadets here for women. I don't know. But a lot of you have You have a similar system here, although many people go through civil service rather than join the army. But I think it's actually really good training to join the army. Even if you're a follower of Krishna consciousness, there's many good opportunities while living in the army barracks or the Air Force barracks or whatever for 8 or 9 months. Many opportunities for preaching and sharing philosophy and learning discipline. So, the Absolute Truth, who is known as Krishna, Govinda, he has unlimited names according to his qualities, he descends. He comes down to us through disciplic succession. The empirical process of extending our senses by improving our eyesight with telescopes and microscopes, improving our hearing with stethoscopes and so many scopes, whatever it is, the empirical process of trying to understand with your senses is very defective. You may learn some relative things within a limited parameter, but there are many things that are beyond the limit of your sense perception. Even materially, sometimes you will see, maybe you're in, what is this, Tivoli Park? I saw one time, a man was there with his dog, and he had a whistle, and he would blow the whistle, and the dog would come running. You couldn't hear the whistle, but it was like he was, you know, when's he going to blow the whistle? He just put it in his mouth. There was no sound. But the dog heard something, but it was such a high-pitched sound that it was beyond the limit of our hearing. So just in a very simple, practical way, you can understand how trying to know everything using the senses is not a very effective process. What to speak of trying to know the Absolute Truth, who is beyond the whole cosmos. Therefore, we depend upon Him to reveal Himself to us. Again, a simple example will help us understand this. If I want to see the president of Slovenia, it's not that easy. I can't just walk up to the parliament building and knock on the door and, how you doing, president? What's happening today? I can even approach his secretary and say, I'd like to meet the president. And she or he will say, certainly, sir, just give me your name and telephone number and we'll call you. So if it's difficult to see a very ordinary person who's going to change in a few years anyway, then how difficult it is to see the original creator of everything who lives beyond time and space. But if the president of Slovenia wants to come and meet Sridhar Swami, there's no problem. And if the Absolute Truth, the supreme transcendental creator, controller, person, wants to reveal himself to us, there is no problem for him. Now, I came here from London, and it wasn't just the pilot flew over Slovenia, came to Ljubljana, and dropped down in the backyard of the temple here. He required an atmosphere, an environment, a place where he could take his little plane and land it, called an airport. So in the same way, we have to create an environment, both externally and internally. We have to become clean so that the Absolute Truth can descend and reveal himself within our hearts and within our environment. So electricity is everywhere. Any seventh grade science student knows electrons, protons, and neutrons are everywhere, every atom. So electricity is everywhere. But if we want to have lights, I've got to call an electrician. Now, for a long time here in the temple, whenever anything broke, we had a big problem because no one knew what to do. But now we have a very nice devotee here who's an electrician. I have a little office over here, and for years I've been coming here. And in that office, I've noticed there's one light right above my desk that's been broken for years, and it's the light that you need to read with. But last year, I met this devotee, and this year when I came, the first thing I did was call him in, and within, 10 minutes, he fixed the light. So God is within every atom. God is everywhere within the creation. Everything is God's energy. One definition of God is that he is the energetic source. There's energy, and he's the energetic, the source of the energy. So, in one sense, you could say God is everywhere. Why should I go to the temple? Why should I go to the church? Why should I go to the mosque? God is everywhere. That's fine. But unless you know the science, how to practically realize God everywhere, you're bereft of any communication with God. God is everywhere, but you can't see him, you can't hear him, you can't smell him, you can't taste him, and therefore people say God is dead. Yes, he is dead to you. In fact, you're a dead head. And I don't mean Jerry Garcia either. The Grateful Dead, the people who followed them were called deadheads. Anyway, the science of Krishna consciousness is coming down through disciplic succession. How to practically see God, how to serve God, how to purify your existence, how to cut the knot of material affection. Affection is good. Emotions are good. Love is good. But affection for something that is going to disappear in a short time is foolish. Especially when you have enough intelligence to realize that there is an option. And affection for things in relationship to God are eternal, and you can relish that reciprocation with God much more than you can than a relationship with material energy. The biggest scientists in our world, in our civilization, throughout history, have studied the universe and its laws. They are in awe of the organization in the universe. On the one side, there is the theory of relativity, and on the other side, there's quantum mechanics. Although both of them have a different understanding of the universe, both of them recognize that there is something very wonderful happening within the universe. It cannot take place just by chance. For example, Einstein was reported to have said, God does not play dice with the universe. So, Krishna, when we say Krishna, we mean the supreme controller. Krishna gives us air to breathe. in a very regular way. Without the energy of the sun and the moon, there would be nothing in vegetables. Vegetables have value because of the sun and the moon, and Krishna gives us light from the sun and the moon. Everything is very well organized. So when Krishna wants to reveal himself, he also does that in a very systematic way. He spoke to Vivaswan, Vivaswan spoke to Manu, Manu to Ikshvaku. These are heavenly demigods in charge of higher planets. I don't know if you get mangoes in Slovenia. Do you get mangoes here? Not so much. Maybe you do. Maybe they're imported from Africa or... Oh, you get good mangoes here, Sanipan? Do you get good mangoes here? From India, you get really good mangoes. It's the king of all fruits. Heavenly fruit. So nectarian. While you're eating mangoes, you almost forget you're in the material world. Prabhupada once said, he was in Hawaii, and Hawaii is famous as a very idyllic place. You have a vision of beautiful beaches and a lot of sunlight and, you know, girls dancing, aloha, hoi, garlands. So he was there with the devotees once, and he was lecturing and saying how it's not possible to be happy in the material world. So much suffering, old age, disease, and death, rebirth, so many miseries. He was saying like that. And then he stopped and he said, but maybe it's possible in Hawaii. So Krishna imparts knowledge in the disciplic succession, and it's passed on from guru to disciple exactly in the same way that the very best mangoes are picked from the tree. In India, you'll see how you actually can see it. If you go to Ratnagiri in Maharashtra, or you go to certain places in Bengal, or even in Andhra Pradesh, they have very good mangoes. The villagers who pick the mangoes, they climb up a ladder, or they climb up the tree, and the best mangoes grow at the top of the tree. We were in Brazil, and they gave us some grapes there, and they were terrible. I don't think they were grapes, although they looked like grapes. And Mayapur Das was explaining to the devotees there that, you know, I am from Croatia. We have good grapes there in Italy, in Spain, in the Mediterranean, because there's a lot of sunlight, and grapes, good grapes, need a lot of sunlight to become very succulent, very sweet. And so mangoes are like that also. The best mangoes grow at the top of the tree where they get a lot of sunlight. So the people, the employees, the mango pickers, they get the mangoes at the top of the tree, but they don't throw them down to the ground. But somebody else climbs up the tree and gets just below them, and they take a mango and they pass it down to him. And then someone else is just below him, and he passes it down to him. And in that way, the fruit reaches the bottom of the tree without any bruise, without any crack and, you know, being spoiled. And they can export those mangoes and get a great price from the Middle East. The Arabs will pay any amount for their mangoes. But that's the way they do it. So spiritual knowledge is passed on like that, very carefully, from guru to disciple, without any concoction, without any invention, without any addition, without any subtraction, It's simply passed down to the next generation. And if you want the real thing, the real good mango, if you want the ripened mango, then you have to receive it like that from him without addition or subtraction. Here is the ripened mango, Srila Prabhupada. He's giving pure knowledge. He trained his disciples and instructed them to pass it on to the next generation. He had full knowledge of what was appropriate for us, at least for many generations to come. You have a pot of rice, and you want to know whether it is cooked. You just take out one grain and squeeze it, test it, to know. So, in understanding who is Srila Prabhupada, we just have to look at the things that he has done that no one else has done. He started alone, without any help and without any money, preaching a doctrine of renunciation in a generation of hedonists. And yet he attracted tens of thousands of disciples and hundreds of thousands of admirers, followers, and curious people. He's very qualified. He translated some 80 books from Sanskrit and Bengali into English, and then his disciples translated them into so many other languages so that practically every country in the world has access to Vedic literature. He did all this at the age of 70 in a period of only 12 years. He opened more than 100 temples in his lifetime and farms and schools. He created a beautiful blueprint for a spiritual society. So for sure, he had the intelligence, the knowledge, and the empowerment from Krishna to give us something, to give us a design, a blueprint, which will facilitate everyone. No matter, we're all unique, we're all a little different, and that's great. Celebrate the differences. But in the house that Prabhupada built, everyone can find a place. So we can understand Srila Prabhupada by reading his books, by watching videos, listening to tapes. But as he himself says in his books, in his lectures, in his videotapes, etc., we have to connect with the generation after him, the generation that he trained, because there's an element there of passing on from one generation. That element is so important to understand the mood of Srila Prabhupada, the person, Srila Prabhupada. He was very disciplined. His life was very regulated. Every day, the same schedule, the same absorption in Krishna conscious activities, while constantly traveling, translating his books, dealing with the problems of thousands of disciples, he never deviated from his regulation. He was very strict with himself and very kind to others. For his disciples who could digest or who could absorb his love, who could understand his mood, he was very tough. He was very heavy in trying to mold them, in trying to, like a diamond. He put a lot of heat and a lot of pressure on coal, constantly. And the product is a beautiful diamond. What Prabhupada gave us is just as important today as it was when we were associating with him. Now there is a natural tendency in the course of time that things destruct, that things atrophy, that things break down. One of the things that breaks down is communication. And therefore, we find that in the course of time, people start concocting different ideas. Even in Lord Chaitanya's time, after his disappearance, there were many what is known as appa sampradayas that followed. They were not following Lord Chaitanya's example or his teachings or that of his immediate disciples, the six Goswamis, but the people started to concoct, not everyone, but little sects here and there, began to concoct their own versions. So this system of disciplic succession is known as the Parampara system, and I'll just read for you what Prabhupada has to say. In the Parampara system, the instructions taken from the bona fide spiritual master must also be based on revealed Vedic scriptures. One who is in the line of disciplic succession, I'll give you this to read. One who is in the line of disciplic succession cannot manufacture his own way of behavior. There are many so-called followers of the Vaishnava cult in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu who do not scrupulously follow the instructions of the Shastras, and therefore they are considered to be appa sampradaya, which means outside of the sampradaya. Some of these groups are known as Aula, Baula, Karta Bhaja, Neda, Daravesha, Shani, Sahajya, Sakibeki, Smarta, Jata Gosai, Ativadi, Chudahari, and Goranganagari. That's a lot, and that's only a partial list. In order to follow strictly the disciplic succession of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, one should not associate with these appa sampradaya communities. One who is not taught by a bona fide spiritual master cannot understand the Vedic literature. To emphasize this point, Lord Krishna, while instructing Arjuna, clearly said that it was because Arjuna was his devotee and confidential friend that he could understand the mystery of Bhagavad Gita. It is to be concluded, therefore, that one who wants to understand the mystery of revealed scriptures must approach a bona fide spiritual master, hear from him very submissively, and render service to him. Then the import of the scriptures will be revealed. It is stated in the Vedas, Svatasvatara Upanishad, Yasya deve para bhaktir tatha deve tatha gurau tasyaite katita hiartha pakashante mahatmanah. For one who has implicit faith in the spiritual master and Lord Krishna, the whole purport of Vedic literature is revealed to him. So we are the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, Founder Acharya's Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. We are presenting in a very straightforward and orthodox way the teachings of the Madhva Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. Some of Srila Prabhupada's god brothers are also teaching, and there may be some little differences in style of preaching, but essentially everybody agrees on the important conclusions, including discipline. Srila Prabhupada gave us a little, what would you call it, slogan. Books are the braces, preaching is the essence, and what I'm talking about, what I'm emphasizing here is Books are the basis, preaching is the essence. Purity is the force. Utility is the principle, but again, purity is the force. And on numerous occasions, I heard personally, I was present in lectures when he said, and throughout his books you'll find, he says that disciple, if you say you're a disciple, disciple comes from discipline. And even he quoted in Sanskrit, the root is sishya, the root of sishya, shastra, etc. They're all from the same verb root form. So again, sishya, it means discipline. So again, Lord Krishna comes down. Srila Prabhupada is a representative. He demonstrated his potency, his prowess in so many ways. He was very humble also. And we are here to teach what Srila Prabhupada taught us. So if someone wants to concoct another idea, someone wants to make certain criticisms of either Srila Prabhupada or his institution, someone wants to quote from Western philosophers and write books, fine, no problem. Someone can go and follow that person and see what results you get. But chances are they have no knowledge of even what they're professing to be authorities of. For example, the father of modern philosophy is Plato. Formerly, people would get a classical education and they would learn Greek and Latin and philosophy as their subjects. Now you don't find those anywhere in any schools or even universities. It's very rare. You find computer programming, basket weaving, home economics, basket weaving. You can get a degree in making baskets. You know, it's really important to get a university education in basket weaving. So if you look at the life of Plato, he was a very disciplined man. Socrates, Plato, all of those Greek philosophers were also people who, as we say, walked their talk. They lived what they spoke, and they were regulated in their lives. Anyway, that aside, we are here to give anyone who wants, a large number of people or a small number of people, we're not attached, the science of Krishna Bhakti as it is coming down from Krishna. So, a disciplined life versus bogus philosophies, there's no competition. We're very clearly stating what we're teaching, and anyone who wants is welcome. There's no question of our experimenting, doing research, and changing. What is true today was true yesterday and will be true tomorrow. Krishna was God 30 billion years ago. Krishna is the Supreme Person today, and he will be 30 billion years from today. All we need to do is adjust our lives in such a way that we can realize Krishna, how he is present everywhere, how he will come to us in our hearts, how we can see him and live with him. Again, it is not jata mat tata pat, as many ways as there are paths. It's not that we're intolerant of others, not at all. We encourage people, do what you have to do. But we're teaching a science. And if you're not here to learn the science, then please go somewhere else. We would like to give you quality. We would like to give you nice quality, like today. You cannot go anywhere in Slovenia, or maybe in Yugoslavia. Well, there are some places, maybe Zagreb, where you can sit down with a group of nice people and sing congregationally and feel such beautiful energy floating all around the room. We would like to give you quality, spiritual experience and philosophy. We would like you to experience being able to look at your watch and say, gosh, we've got to stop kirtan now. I wish we could go on all night. In fact, yesterday the devotees did step all night long and chant Hare Krishna. It was so nice. It was so beautiful. You can feel Krishna and his name are not different. You can say it and think it, but until you actually chant and just forget time, forget the world outside, and merge yourself in the holy name and just relish the taste, you'll never understand. But when you do that, it's easy to understand, and we want to give you that experience. We want you to be able to come here and say, I have no blind faith in everything, in anything. I don't trust anything until I understand it. And we want to sit down with you, and if it takes all night or all year, we'll sit and discuss philosophy about a subject which is really, really important to all of us. And in a gentlemanly way, you can argue and debate, and we'll discuss with you, and we'll concede where you make a point, and then we'll present something, and we'll discuss this subject so nicely that both of us will make progress, and our chanting will become even sweeter and nicer. No discipline, everything spoiled. We might as well just be hippies. And Prabhupada said, this is not a hippie hotel, because I used to be a hippie. And many of the devotees who joined in the 60s had turned on, tuned in, and dropped out. We were hippies. You know that? You don't know that. Turned on, tuned in, dropped out. You never heard that before, huh? It was Timothy Leary's theme song. Probably haven't even heard of Timothy Leary, huh? Recently he died, and he had his head shot into outer space along with a rocket that was, you know, going into the atmosphere to do scientific tests. He was the guy who introduced lysergic acid diethyl tryptamate, otherwise known as LSD, to the world. And he wanted to go on another trip, so. But Prabhupada turned us into happies. From hippies, we became happies. So does anybody have any problem with that? I know it's hard to surrender to authorities and to get disciplined. It's not our nature in this age. What do they say? Anti-disestablishmentarianism. There's an expression like that. Big long word. It's one word, anti-disestablishmentarianism. That's like supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. You know Mary Poppins? Anyone? You probably heard. You haven't heard of Timothy Leary or this one, but you all heard of Mary Poppins, right? Huh? Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. It's the longest word in the English dictionary, I think. It's one word, supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. Huh? What?
That word makes the medicine go down.
Makes the medicine go down?
The throat, yes.
I don't know. Although there's a joke about Mahatma Gandhi. He walked everywhere. He didn't take cars or anything. He would just walk. So he developed a lot of calluses on his feet from walking. And he did a lot of fasting So he became very skinny and fragile. And he had some kind of mystic potency, but he also developed not exactly Parkinson's disease, but he was shaking a little bit. So super callous, fragile mystic. Expialidocious is a disease with that name. It only kind of makes sense in English. But anyway, does anybody have problems with this idea of discipline and what we're presenting, and good fences make good neighbors? If somebody doesn't want what we're offering, then, hi, Bo, write me a letter sometime, tell me how you're doing, but we'll give you the real thing. Maybe a little harder, you may have to pay a price. But I'm real glad my father gave me discipline. I didn't like it at that time, but it's done a lot for me in my life, for my mind, for my body, for my overall enthusiasm, everything. And the nature of my service over the last 30 years has been that I have worked with some of the biggest people in the world, some of the wealthiest and most successful people, both in India and outside of India. And the biggest people were always the most disciplined people. The most successful people were always the most disciplined. So if you want, if you're just here because, the horse burger stand is closed on Sunday night, there's a free meal here, so I don't know. Okay, that's fine for one. But if you're here for a real experience, if you want to improve your life now and have direction and happiness in this world and the next, then you can get that here. But there's a lot of really nice, gentle devotees here at this temple. They're sweet, they're gentle, they're kind. But I'm an exception. I'm nasty, I'm mean, and I'm here to chase away all the frivolous, bogus philosophy. I mean, you keep your bogus philosophy to yourself. Keep your books to yourself. Anybody got any problems? Go ahead, challenge me, I dare you. Come on, guys, a little action. Yes. Good, thank you.
Was it Krishna's plan that the original knowledge, this chain, got broken?
This is the kingdom of Maya. It's not easy to be Krishna conscious here. He's calling us, hey, come to my place, it's much easier. Tamasi Ma, don't stay in darkness, Jyotir Gama, come to the light. But it's we who foolishly insist, no, I've got some work still to do. I want to stay here. It's easy. You just give up your material attachments. Illicit sex is not in your self-interest. It doesn't make for a happy material society. Men and women very quickly lose respect for each other when they engage in irreligious sexual activities. When they abuse each other as just machines for gratification, it may not come out directly vocally, but psychologically in the mind, relationships atrophy, they break down. But when two adults live together in mutual respect with maturity and trying to achieve a spiritual goal, love of God, that can make for a beautiful marriage, a beautiful relationship. We've seen it 100 years ago when things were not so bad as they are today, where people actually lived together their whole lives. There wasn't a 60% or 70% divorce rate. So much so that Krishna says, Dharma virudha bhuteshu, if you follow religious principles, kamosmi, I am sex. I can be realized or appreciated in a God-conscious relationship. But if either the husband or the wife are not disciplined and they instigate material activities, material fall down, then there can only be disaster. And there's never been a time in recent history, meaning centuries, when society has been farther away from spiritual values. And here are the symptoms: breakdown in relationships. People are so caught up in I, me, and mine that they never even think of the other person. Meat eating is not necessary, not healthy, and not good for you. You know, the other day we were walking by the horse burger stand, and I saw someone eating a horse burger. They were in their car, so I was higher than them, and I was looking down. And, you know, there's a big fat bun with tomato sauce and, you know, some other condiments. And then there was the burger inside, and he was enjoying it. And I thought, is it the bun and the tomato sauce and everything that he enjoys, or is it actually the horse that he's eating that he enjoys? I mean, if I just killed a horse, cut his throat, and he was lying on the side of the road, would people come running with their plates and take some horse? They've been brainwashed into thinking that it's food fit for human beings, not good for your health. Every cancer society and heart society in the world will tell you the statistics. I have been a vegetarian for 35 years or more, and I'm, you know, almost 55. And I also have a little liver problem, which was due to something I did as a hippie. But my vegetarian diet has given me enough strength that I'm ready to wrestle with anybody in this room. You know, gorillas are vegetarian, elephants are vegetarian. We get too much protein in our meat diet. It's unhealthy. It creates a mentality of violence in the mind. And that spills over in our relationships with other countries, other people, other parts of the world. Intoxication. You don't need intoxication. It's costly, it's damaging to your body, it spoils again relationships. The first time when I graduated from high school and there was prom, the high school prom, you know, the graduation dance, and I tried to invite some girl, and, you know, I had to get a little drunk so I had enough courage. That wasn't an experience. It was a drunken stupor. It's sometimes hard to be just straight as you are, your personality, wear your personality on your chest, on your t-shirt, you know. But the relationship that you have with someone when you're unintoxicated is so nice, it's so clean, so fresh. You're missing life by getting intoxicated. If you want intoxication, then come here and chant Hare Krishna. And, you know, a frivolous, capricious life, a whimsical life where you're gambling and wasting your time. You don't have time to waste. It tempus fugit, flies away very quickly, time. So Prabhupada has given us these regulative principles for our well-being, even if we don't take ultimately to chanting Hare Krishna. But just these regulative principles can make your life better. you'll be a happier atheist, if that makes sense. I don't know. You're not satisfied. Explain more.
I think that the answer why did the specific succession get broken?
Oh, why did it get broken? Because I said right at the very beginning, this is the material world where everything breaks down. Huh? No, while shipping it to the Middle East in the airplane. If you would just eat it immediately, it would be fine. But because you're profit motivated, you cannot get good mangoes in India. They're all sold to England or to the Arabs who will pay a very high price. The poor Indians have to settle for second, third class mangoes. Because gradually, generation by generation, just like I'm trying my very best to give you Srila Prabhupada, but I'm not very good. I can't even hold a candle to this man. You know, like holding a candle to light up the sun. Oh, the sun, I've got to make it clear here. Take a candle. So whatever you're going to get, it depends a lot on your desire, but it also depends on how much of a medium I am. And if I have my own filter, I'm not a pure, transparent medium, then it's going to be harder for you to understand the message, and then it'll be harder for you to explain it to the next generation. And therefore, Krishna comes again and again to renovate or to invigorate, to restart the disciplic succession. But in terms of your situation, we should all consider that you almost met Prabhupada. Many of you have been coming here for 5, even 10 years, or whatever. And Prabhupada only left 23, 25, well, 77, 25 years ago. When there's a crime, and the police come to the scene of the crime, immediately they start forensic research. They try to get fingerprints and any clues that may have been left by the thief or the murderer. Now, 5 years later, it's useless to do an investigation. But with Srila Prabhupada, there's still lots of forensic evidence all around. And, you know, you can go to Vrindavan and you can see the places of Krishna's pastimes, and you'll feel some inspiration. And, you know, someone from Vrindavan will try to sell you a lock of Krishna's hair or some nail clippings from Lord Krishna. And it's probably all bogus. But his representative, Srila Prabhupada, you can go to 26 Second Avenue. You can see the tree where Prabhupada sat alone and played on his bongo drums and just started chanting. He had no money. And you can go to places where he did so many things. And you know there's video to show. You're sitting there and there's a video showing him. This is where he sat. And so my point is that for those who want, it's still a very good time to get the message from the most powerful representative of the disciplic succession in centuries. There were many great sages in the forest of Naimisharanya. There was Vyasadeva, Narad Muni, Maitreya Muni, so many rishis, and they came with all their disciples. They were powerful mystics, they were very pure, unbelievable energy. But Shukadeva Goswami was chosen to speak the Srimad Bhagavatam, And Parikshit Maharaj was chosen by Providence to hear and to ask questions. So there are many great teachers, including Rupa Goswami, Jiva Goswami, Narottam Das, Vishwanath Chakravarti, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So many great personalities, both since Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and even before him in the Ramanuja and Madhva Sampradaya, great, powerful teachers. Beyond our imagination, we don't see such men in our society. Kunti, Devi, Gandhari, Draupadi, we don't see such women. But Srila Prabhupada was chosen to do more preaching than any of them. And we're so close to him that you can get everything if you want. There's another light in my room that needs fixing. Okay. I just saw him. He knows the science, how to connect with electricity, and we know the science, how to see Krishna. Any other questions? Mm-hmm. Sandy Pani. One of my favorite singers in Yugo. Been around for how many years? 10 years. There's a lot of, I don't know, something about Yugoslavia that's mystical. Many good singers, bhajan, kirtan leaders, many good preachers, many, they're all over the world, you know. I have a Croatian servant who's been with me 6 years, and we travel everywhere to every continent in the world. And I have no problem wherever I go. I just tell Mayapur to find the Croatians in the temple, and as soon as he plugs in to one, we're connected with, you know, so many Croatians. And any service we need done, it's taken care of. You know? Especially Croatians, but also Slovenians and Serbians. They're all over the world. I was just with one boy in Brazil. His name is Matura Disha. Slovenian. I don't know if any of you remember him or know him. Yeah? He's been living in Australia for many years. Yes, Sanipani, I interrupted you, I'm sorry.
We are talking about the universe of this material world. And we are experiencing it all the time.
Yeah.
How miserable this material world is, actually. And for millions of millions of lifetimes, we are experiencing miseries. And we are seeing how people, how they are suffering. But still, and we have knowledge even how to get rid of it. But somehow, we are keeping the...
Your good moments will be prominent in your mind, and your bad moments are passé, or, you know, passé, okay. This is the age of quarrel and hypocrisy, the age of darkness. It's not easy to be completely purified even in Satya Yuga. So how difficult it is in Kali Yuga. But if you just persevere in this lifetime, you will get great credit for trying your best. In the teachings of Lord Kapila, Srila Prabhupada paraphrases a conversation between Lord Krishna and Arjuna. Arjuna says, Krishna, this is all very well and good, I'm not this body, I should be detached. But you're asking me to kill my gurus, my relatives, my friends. This is very, very difficult and hard. And Krishna says, yes, Arjuna, because you're attached, you'll have to suffer. So we can, through experience, through association, with liberated devotees, develop more and more confidence to let go of our material attachments. Yehi sansparsaja bhoga dukha yonaya evate. These material attachments are the source of our suffering. It's hard to give up those attachments which have been developed over not one lifetime, but many lifetimes. It's like that. Tearing, ripping, letting go of our attachments. But again, if you just do your best and try to replace lower animal propensities with transcendental activities, even if you come to the level of prema, which is the beginning of love of God, like Bharat Maharaj, you could still fall down. But if you try your best, Krishna will bless you, and at the time of your death, you won't have to come back to this material, miserable world. And all along the way, if you make some progress, you'll get some relief. So that when you get to be an old man like me, you'll still be suffering, but less. And when you get to be 75, you may be blissed out. That's what I'm hoping for. But even otherwise, I don't have any hope in the material world. I've already scoped that out. I've already examined that. Why don't we let go? Why don't we give up our attachments? Why are we masochists and want to continue suffering even though we know better? Try to appreciate that we are very special people. We have, you know, there are unlimited numbers of souls who never left the spiritual world. We're the belligerent, foolish, stupid few. So sometimes you'll find that someone who is very stubborn, you know, in the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says that, what is that verse? Ascharyavat paschuti kaschut inam ascharyavat vadati tathaiva chanya ascharyavat chainam anya shrinoti srutvapyenam vedana chayava kaschut. Some people can simply hear from an authority and realize, yes, that's true, let me change my life. Others hear, but they have to have some experiences, and then they remember, well, I heard that, and I've just experienced a bitter situation. Okay, let me change my life. Others, they hear, they experience, and still they don't learn. And they get knocked and knocked and knocked, bashed by material energy. And when they're finally battered and shattered, then finally, ah, Krishna saved me. We're probably in that category. You and me. And these other people, they're saintly. I had a feeling you were going to ask a question. I don't know, something psychic. Okay, go ahead.
Doesn't love bring attachment? Huh? Doesn't love bring attachment to something?
Yes, so love brings attachment, so be careful what you love. Because you want to develop attachment to things where your love can go on growing forever. Now, if I love my car, maybe I'll enjoy it for a few years, but pretty soon that car is going to break down and, you know, I'll have to take it to the junkyard. Then my love will be shattered. I'll have a funeral and you'll cry. But if I love Krishna, Krishna will always be there. Even when I leave this body, Krishna will be open-armed waiting for me. And Krishna knows me. He knows everything that will satisfy me expertly. What? You cannot be detached. It's not possible. You're either attached to the transcendental or you're attached to the illusion or the reflection of the transcendental. There's nothing in between. There's nothing like being agnostic. There's no such thing. It's just a word. It has no meaning. You know, if I go to the government in Ljubljana and I say, Your Honor, go to the court, I don't believe in your laws, but I don't disbelieve in them either. What do you think the judge is going to say? Oh, okay, you can do what you like then. As long as you don't disbelieve in our laws, you go ahead and break them, doesn't matter. He'll say, you believe whatever you want, but if you drive on the left-hand side of the road, we're going to have to put you in jail. So you either follow the laws of God, or you don't follow. You can say, I believe this or I don't believe that, but it has no meaning. Huh? You got lost? If you got lost, what about me? You can't, either you follow the laws of the country or you don't. If you don't, you get put in jail. And either you follow the laws of God or you don't. If you don't follow the laws of God, you'll be punished. You believe whatever you like, but there's nothing in between. Krishna says you get old. No, I don't believe in getting old. No, you get old. Krishna says you get diseased. No, I don't want any disease, thank you. It doesn't matter what you want. It's your karma, you can get diseased. I don't want to die now. I want to live for another 100 years. Well, that's too bad. You're dead. We've got to become disciplined in our senses, in our mind, in our thinking. We will benefit from that. We will become peaceful and happy. We'll get control of our time and our life. If you don't press it on yourself, material nature will press it on you. There is a point where you develop spontaneous love for Krishna. And at that point, there are no rules and regulations. None. Not a few. There are none. But until your heart is completely free from lust and anger and greed, until you've cleaned house perfectly, you can't enter onto the platform of Raghunuga Bhakti. Now, I don't know. Maybe some of you have reached that platform. I haven't. I would love to get there. I used to be a hippie, and I'll become a hippie again. For Krishna. I understand what you're saying. It seems like emotion and real love is, it just flows from the heart like the rivers flow from the mountains, and there's no check to it. And you're right, but you have to become qualified for that level of pure love. That's right. Actually, this is interesting. In any talent or expertise that you develop, there is a kind of unwritten rule that you follow all the rules and regulations perfectly, and when you've done that, then you really become expert by breaking the rules and regulations. But I'll tell you another thing about Raghunuga Bhakta, and I just read it. He, even after coming to the spontaneous platform, it all goes on with inside him. Externally, he remains regulated and disciplined, just to set an example for others. Now, Prabhupada did not make a show of ecstatic symptoms. It's not an accepted etiquette in spiritual circles. So he controlled his emotions, but internally he was experiencing very powerful love for Krishna, Raganuga Bhakti. Sometimes it was so intense that he couldn't control it, and we saw it spill out. But for sure, if he had manifested symptoms of ecstasy everywhere and anywhere, and some of those symptoms are, you know, pretty amazing symptoms as they're described in scripture, he would have created a society of sahajiyas. Everybody would have followed that. So I'm not denying that you shouldn't, you know, look forward to a time very soon or in time when you will love Krishna to your heart's content in the most, almost delirious with love, feeling overpowering ecstasy. That time will come. Even then, you will keep it under control. Now, I've got a book about one of my god sisters. She died of cancer, brain tumor. She was a good housewife, a very ordinary woman, not particularly attractive materially, not a big book distributor or a great preacher. She was just a faithful, chaste housewife, happy in her service. She developed a taste for chanting the holy names, and she was satisfied. Then, in the last 2 years after it was known she had cancer and her health deteriorated, she went through some amazing changes. And this is all recorded by her husband, Bhakti Balapuri Goswami, now. In those days his name was Balabhadra Das, and all the devotees of Edinburgh Temple, the Scottish devotees. And as she got sicker, she got sicker and more sicker, sicker and sicker, I guess that's, I don't know if it's more sick or sicker, but anyway, as she became more sickly, she became very detached and renounced. And there were many mystical experiences. For one, she had a brain tumor, and generally what the doctors do, there's so much pain from that, they don't give you morphine, they give you a triple dose of morphine, and still there's pain. She refused and never took any painkillers. She had an operation on her head to take out the tumor. It wasn't successful. She became blind. Blood would ooze from her eyes, and so many heavy, hellish things. She remained always pleasant, and, you know, she was helped by the devotees. Her husband helped her a lot. But she went through those last 2 years, and in the end she just couldn't control herself. And she began to reveal, in exchanges with devotees, ecstasies and levels of consciousness which are not normal in ordinary devotees. You don't find that kind of advancement. And she even got some inspiration about her Nitya Swarup, her identity in the spiritual world. And it was very innocent, and it was something, you know, when somebody's concocting and making a show, like there was a guy running around Croatia the last time I was here, and he was, you know, making a show of being with Krishna, and, you know, he was all the time taking intoxication and running around with women, and, you know, it didn't fit well. But her experience was witnessed by Shivaram Swami and many advanced devotees, and they recognized it was very genuine. They didn't understand it so well, but it was, whatever was happening was genuine. And she left in a very glorious way. She knew the exact day when she was going to leave. She told all the devotees, tomorrow I'm going, and she left. So she was not a GBC man or woman. She was not a big person, a sannyasi or a guru, just a simple devotee, but sincere. And she developed Raghunuga Bhakti in time. So it's there, but first we have to become good sadhakas, following sadhana. When the president wants to come and meet Sridhar Swami, he can do so in his own time, no problem. Even if I'm not here, I'll come back again just to meet him. And when Krishna wants to meet you, don't worry. It'll be beautiful. But for now, you just concentrate on the basic things. Yeah, discipline, that's right. Okay, you try being indisciplined. Let us know how it goes.